Radio Prague News.
The Czech and Polish prime ministers say they are in favor of a proposed US rocket and radar base on their territory. Russia says it will aim missiles at the proposed facilities. Police ease security measures at Prague's Ruzyně airport after a five-day terrorist alert. And the Czech justice minister is to tighten rules on phone tapping during police investigations. The Czech Republic and Poland will probably give their consent to the construction of a new US missile defence system on their territory. Czech Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek and his Polish counterpart Jaroslaw Kaczyński have announced. Both prime ministers said after a meeting in Warsaw that they would probably react positively to a US request to build a rocket base in Poland and a radar facility in the Czech Republic. They also said that they did not expect a referendum on the issue to be held in their countries. Meanwhile, the commander of Russia's strategic rocket forces, Nikolai Solovtsov, has told journalists that if the Polish and Czech bases are built, the Russian army would aim some of its missiles at the facilities. This morning, Czech police eased anti-terrorism measures at Prague's Ruzyně airport, which have been in place since last Wednesday. The airport had been on a state of high alert after police received information from a woman claiming to be a psychic that an aircraft was going to be attacked. Police said they had been duty-bound to take the threat seriously as the woman did not act anonymously and had very specific information about the planes that were to be targeted. The Prima commercial television station reported that flights to Israel had been the subject of most concern. The Czech Justice Minister, Jiří Pospíšil, has said he intends to introduce legislation that would allow Czechs whose phones have been illegally wiretapped by the police to claim compensation. Under a proposed amendment to the Penal Code, Mr. Pospíšil intends to make it obligatory for police to inform suspects that their phones had been bugged within 1 year of the completion of the investigation in question. They would then have the right to file a compensation lawsuit if they thought the bugging was illegal. The draft legislation also tightens the rules under which wiretapping would be allowed. If passed, bugging would only be permitted if the information and proof the police need cannot be obtained in any other way. A Czech radio station has reported that Czech Deputy Prime Minister Jiří Čunek, who is currently facing corruption charges, made a substantial property investment in 2000, but has not yet explained the circumstances surrounding the deal. The radio Česko station reported that the Christian Democrat politician bought a share worth 500,000 Czech crowns, or $23,000, in a holiday cabin in Jeseniki, North Moravia. Mr. Čunek has admitted that he made the investment but has declined to give any details about the transaction. The Deputy Prime Minister was recently charged by police with taking a bribe from a building company when he was mayor of the town of Vsetín 5 years ago. I'm Colin O'Connor and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, and I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in the programme, Prague's famous St. Vitus Cathedral changes ownership once again. Is the Czech Green Party turning blue? We'll bring you a report about the Masopust celebrations preceding Lent, which are held annually in the Czech Republic, a roundup of the sports news, and in today's one-on-one, Jan Wellinger will be talking to architectural historian Zdeněk Lukeš. All that coming your way, please stay with us. Many in the Czech Republic considered it case closed when a Prague appeals court last September confirmed the Roman Catholic Church's ownership of Prague's famous St. Vitus Cathedral. At the time, it appeared that the ruling had brought to an end a prolonged legal battle between the church and state. More than 50 years after St. Vitus was confiscated under the communists, it was returned to the church. But its renewed ownership didn't last long. On Friday, the Supreme Court annulled all earlier rulings, returning the cathedral to the state and the legal case back to square one. Jan Wellinger has the story.
14 years and counting, that is how one can sum up the continuing legal battle over St. Vitus Cathedral. The church and the state have been at odds over the site since 1992, and no solution is on the horizon. While lower instance courts ruled that the church never lost original ownership, that the communist government merely oversaw the church's administration, the Supreme Court has now ruled otherwise. In effect, last week it acknowledged a complaint put forward by Prague Castle administration that the lawsuit should have been thrown out. All along, they have argued that the church should have filed a restitution action rather than a determination of ownership suit. Marika Komonyova is the spokeswoman for the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court recognized the complaint put forward by the Office of the President of the Czech Republic as grounds for annulling earlier decisions in the case.
Certainly the ruling has caught some off guard. While the church has opted not to comment on the development so far, Petr Zgerčík, representing the church in the case, most certainly doesn't agree with the assessment. He says determination of ownership was the right lawsuit to file.
We put forward the determination of ownership lawsuit because nobody is going to talk to you about anything unless your property is registered with the land registry. Now it goes back to square one. The case is at the start. Providing the client will wish to continue, the case will now go to the district courts, appeals court, constitutional court, and apparently it will have to go as far as the International Court of Human Rights.
If it does go as far as the International Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, Mr. Zgerčík indicates the case would be filed on the basis the church was discriminated against by the Czech judiciary. One thing is certain. The legal proceedings for the Gothic Cathedral, the coronation site of kings, will continue. 14 years in, there's no end to the legal battle in sight.
Jan Wellinger with that report, and of course we'll be following that story. Environment Minister Martin Bursík won two big battles this weekend at a Green Party national convention. He went a long way towards persuading his colleagues to support the stationing of a US radar system on Czech territory. He was also re-elected chairman and his most loyal colleagues, his deputies. But while Mr. Bursík celebrates, his party faces a barrage of criticism. Dieter Asiedu has more.
Poslední dobou začínáme být čím dál méně zelení a čím dál více modří.
Are the Greens green enough? A question raised this weekend by party member Matěj Stropnický, who voiced fears that the party had derailed in an effort to stay in government. Instead of green, he says, it is now taking up the colour of the governing coalition Civic Democrats, blue. And Mr. Stropnický is not alone with this opinion. Political commentator Lukáš Valeš.
The Green Party in the Czech Republic is very, very different from the Green parties in the West Europe. And it's not in the middle of political spectrum or on the left, but on right. Because it's not the first Martin Bursík's party. Martin Bursík was a member of Christlich Democratic Party. And I'm afraid that it's really, first of all, about his or political position. I am not sure that the program of Green Party are really based, first of all, on the environment.
Of the 35 speakers who took part in a debate over the radar station this weekend, most of them opposed it. Some even called the United States a global parasite that should not be allowed to influence the lives of Czech residents. But in the end, Martin Bursík won with a compromise proposal to support the US scheme on the condition that it gets the green light from NATO. In Brussels, the European Greens, who clearly oppose the US radar scheme, have been careful not to criticize their Czech colleagues. European Green spokeswoman Ulrika Lunacek attended the convention in Prague.
As the European Green Party, yes, it's true that we're afraid that such a system would rather be a threat to European security and stability than an asset. But we have to accept also the decision a party is taking. And my understanding is it's not the final decision yet. Of course, it's true that the countries that were under the Warsaw Pact have a different history than the Western countries have. And also Green parties have a different history. And the Czech party is a rather new party, but it's the strongest Green party we have in the new member countries. And it is, of course, a very Green party. If you look at their record on environmental issues, but also on issues like gender balance, they have a gender balance in their parliamentary seats and in their government positions, which no other party, I think, has.
Czech Green Party leader Martin Bursík himself rejects criticism that he's not following traditional party lines. The government's policy program concentrates on more environmental issues than ever before. and it's only natural for a party to compromise if it's in government with two other parties, he says.
Moving on to other things now, the Masopust, or carnival, now underway in Prague's Žižkov Quarter, is said to come to a climax on Tuesday. Masopust always takes place towards the end of winter, before the start of Lent, and though many Czechs no longer celebrate it, the tradition of Masopust is slowly making a comeback. The Žižkov Town Hall has been organizing its own carnival for 14 years now. Lenka Petáková reports on this year's event.
The five-day festival opened with music and a series of short theatre performances on Friday in the presence of the mayor of Žižkov, Milena Kozumplíková, interior minister Ivan Langer and police president Vladislav Husák. Every year, the Masopust celebrations have a different theme. This year's theme is criminal science, explaining the presence of the letter bigwigs. I asked the organizer of the Žižkov Carnival, Jaroslav Brabec, what inspired the Žižkov councillors to choose criminal science as the main theme of this year's carnival.
This year's Žižkov Carnival observes the 130th anniversary of the birth of police councillor Vacátko, whose real name was Josef Vaňásek. He lived from 1877 to 1938 and was active in several of Prague's quarters, including Žižkov. He devoted all his life to criminal science, and while in office, he substantially contributed to its development in the Czech lands.
Czech TV has popularized police councillor Vacátko in several TV series, such as The Sinful People of the City of Prague and The History of Criminal Science, with Vacátko as the main character and Žižkov as the setting of many of the stories. A substantial part of the carnival program is, therefore, inspired by Vacátko's life and fights between criminal elements and defenders of the law. The program also includes an exhibition of posters, concerts of several local music bands and film screenings. But above all, the carnival is a real feast, with one of the Žižkov restaurants cooking carnival specialties for the participants. The Žižkov Carnival will end on Tuesday with a final parade starting at 4 o'clock on Jiří's Poděbrad Square and ending in the Parukářka Park late in the evening. Kathleen, an American tourist, has already decided to take part in it and join the other 2,000 or 3,000 people with masks.
I'm most looking forward to the parade on Tuesday because I hear the most about it and I've only seen pictures of it, but it looks really interesting and it definitely reminds me of Carnival and Mardi Gras, so I'm looking forward to it.
Are you yourself going to wear a mask?
Yeah, definitely. I've heard that it's very encouraged. I only have a simple mask for myself because I wasn't sure of what kind of mask to get. I've seen in the pictures very interesting and exotic-looking masks, but I think this time I will attend the parade and see what more experienced people have, and then I will know more for if I am here next year.
Are you going to take any friends along?
Yes, I hope so. I will definitely encourage my friends. I think I have plenty of ways to convince them that it's a good idea to come if there's offering of such interesting things to see and beer and etc.
That report about the Masopust celebrations in Prague was brought to you by Lenka Petáková. And on Radio Prague, it's now time for our Monday Sports Roundup with Ian Willoughby.
The Czech Republic frequently enjoys success in cross-country skiing. But partly due to a lack of suitable slopes, the country has never done so well in downhill skiing. So there was euphoria on Friday when Šárka Záhrobská became the first Czech ever to win a world title in alpine skiing. Záhrobská led after the first round of the slalom at the World Championships in Sweden's Ura. She then managed to keep her nerve and achieve the fourth best time in the second round, guaranteeing an historic success for the Czech Republic.
Minutes after becoming world champion, the 22-year-old described her feelings.
I feel I've finally achieved my goal. I've come first, and it's the first time I've managed that. I want to savor the feeling of being first when there's nobody in front of you. I'm really satisfied, of course. I gave my all. It was hard, though, because I was really nervous.
Šárka Záhrabská. She wasn't the only young Czech woman to top the podium at the weekend. 2 weeks after becoming the first Czech to win a speed skating World Cup event, Martina Sablíková did it again on Saturday, winning the 5,000 metres in Erfurt, Germany. What's more, the 19-year-old has a good chance of coming first overall in the World Cup. She goes into the last event of the season at the start of next month, 78 points clear of her nearest rival. Ice hockey now, and this year there's an unusually exciting end to the regular season in the Czech Extraliga. With one game to go before the playoffs, five sides are still in contention for the last three places. Kladno, Litvinov, Třinec, Znojmo and Vítkovice can all still make the top 10. Tuesday evening's final round of the regular season promises to be very thrilling indeed. Moving on to football, and how well Czech international goalkeeper Petr Cech has been doing since he returned after a skull fracture. The Chelsea star conceded 2 goals on his comeback in mid-January, but since then he hasn't let in 1 goal. His good run now extends to 7 games without conceding, after Chelsea beat Norwich 4-0 in the FA Cup on Saturday. And finally, Prague club Bohemians may be in the second division, but they remain one of the best-supported clubs in the country, regularly drawing 5,000 supporters to their Dolíček stadium. But Bohemians fans don't just turn out for home games. 1,000 of them travel to Salzburg on Sunday to watch the Kangaroos in a friendly against the Austrian league leaders. They lost 4-2. That's all the sport for today.
A reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, coming your way from the Czech capital here in Central Europe. Now, in today's edition of One on One, you can meet one of the country's most respected architectural historians, Zdeněk Lukeš.
In today's one-on-one, my guest is Zdeněk Lukeš, one of the country's most respected architectural historians. He's employed at the office of the President's Heritage Section overseeing Prague Castle. Mr. Lukeš first began working there in 1990, and in our interview recalls changes that he's seen, the fate of a secret atomic bunker, and a famous visit by the world's so-called greatest rock and roll band. I began by asking Mr. Lukeš first what coming to the castle was like.
I went to Prague Castle in the summer of 1990, and it was a surprise for me, of course, the atmosphere here, especially if I compare it with my last job, because I worked 10 years in Archives of Architecture of National Museum of Technology in a very special building called House of Invalids in Karlín, Prague Karlín. Big Baroque building designed by Fischer von Erlach and Dinsenhofer. 6 wings and big yard inside the building with a fountain and very old plane trees which were planted there in the period when this complex was established. It means in Baroque period. And some movies were moved there, for instance a movie about Count Dracula or famous Amadeus by Milos Forman. And maybe you remember the first sequence of the film when famous actor Murray Abraham, who played Salieri, was transferred to this insane hospital. He sat in the cell, it was my office. Very strange. In the 1st of August of 1990, I changed totally the space. And I started to work in Prague Castle, in the office of the president. And everything was absolutely perfect. But on the other hand, the taste of communist leaders was terrible. That's why that the first problem for all of us who started to work with Mr. Havel in 1990 was to change the atmosphere. And then from 93 I started to work in a very small office of historical monuments.
And that has as its main focus the castle itself and its general environment.
Yeah, there is something specific that Prague Castle is not part of the city, is independent of the city. It's like a system in Rome, for instance, the Vatican City is also independent. Prague Castle is an independent area with own status. And Prague Castle, it means not only courtyards and buildings and palaces, but also the whole fortification system around and set of gardens around the largest area still used as a head of state representative seat in the world.
Was the main guideline that you followed simply to restore the castle to its former state or also to introduce some more contemporary elements?
Of course, firstly we want to recreate all treasures of all periods of Prague Castle from pre-Romanesque through Romanesque, Gothic, Renaissance, Baroque, Classicistic, but also Neo-Gothic edition of the Cathedral of St. Vitus, and also 20th century architecture examples, including Plečník Janák. On the other side, we wanted to also to present contemporary art, contemporary architecture here. That's why that we started to collaborate with more than 50 architects. It was necessary to open Prague Castle for public, because in communist regime most of spaces were closed, including gardens. For instance, the Royal Garden was closed totally. And many, many other parts of Prague Castle, for instance, Stegmoot, a nice example of wild nature right in the center of city. We had some problems with very specific spaces. For instance, communists started to build top-secret anti-atomic shelter in the early 50s, and then everything was stopped and kept. But after Russian occupation in 1968, President Husák decided to reopen again this shelter and to finish all works there. And it was a gigantic project. Secret corridors went down 11 levels under the level of ground. And the idea was to connect these spaces with the office of the president by a special elevator. But it was never finished. And it was a big question for all of us, how to use these spaces as a storage, or to open for public, but it was not possible for safety reasons. Yeah. And if you go there, it's very depressive, very narrow corridors from concrete and bricks, but it's absolutely strange system. We couldn't find out any possibility how to use it.
Mm-hmm. So it's just been closed off?
Yeah, and... yeah. Once I went there with a group of American journalists, and now the group saw that there is something like a paper boxes somewhere in one corridor, a blind corridor, and they asked me, what does it mean? And I answered, I don't know, maybe there is something inside. And somebody went there, and there were bones, human bones, in these boxes. And they asked me, what does it mean? And I answered, oh, maybe bones of victims, of people who built this top-secret corridor. And next time, I read the article in somewhere, and somebody mentioned that there are victims of these corridors. But it was not true, of course. It was archaeological foundings of Institute of Archaeology of Academy of Science.
If we turn back to the beginning of Václav Havel's presidency, one thing that Václav Havel did that raised Prague's profile on the international scene was also inviting a good many well-known cultural figures to the capital. I wanted to ask you how you remembered that period.
Some of these people I have chance to meet, for instance, Rolling Stones group, and they went to Prague Castle also, and it was fortunately my first day in my new job in Prague Castle. I accompanied the group through the official rooms, and the third courtyard, the main courtyard of Prague Castle, was overcrowded of young people, and they cried, Mick Jagger, Mick Jagger, Václav Havel. And Václav Havel answered, okay, we could open the door and enter on the balcony. And it was a balcony connected with delegations, and we have old photos with Adolf Hitler there and Leonid Brezhnev there. And so that's why that Havel said, okay, this balcony is prepared for better people than these leaders, and okay, we could enter out of on the balcony and welcome people in Prague. But nobody knew where the key of the balcony door is. That's why that it was not possible to open the door. And then Mr. Havel opened the window, and we went to the balcony through the window. It was nice. Yeah, and 1,000 people crowded outside the castle, and in the evening we went to see the concert.
And that edition of One on One with architectural historian Zdeněk Lukeš brings us to the end of today's program. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us and goodbye.
I see a line of cars and they are painted black, with flowers and my love hope never to come back. I see people turn their heads and quickly look away, like a newborn baby, it just happens every day. I look inside myself and see my heart is black. I see my red door, I must have it into black. Maybe then I'll fade away and not have to face the facts. It's not easy facing up when your whole world is black. No more will my green seagull turn a deeper blue. I could not foresee this thing happening to you. If I look hard enough into the setting sun.
Posloucháte Rádio Praha, vysílání Českého rozhlasu do zahraničí. Ve střední Evropě naladíte vysílání Rádia Praha od 13.30 na frekvenci 6055 kHz. Od 13.30 vysíláme také do západní Evropy, ovšem na frekvenci 7345 kHz. V západoevropských zemích nás uslyšíte také od 16.30 na frekvenci 5930 a na stejné frekvenci nás zachytíte i v 18.30 a ve 20.30.
V jihozápadní Evropě si nás budete moci poslechnout od 9.30 na frekvenci 11 600 kHz a od 22 hodin na frekvenci 5930 nebo 9435 kHz. V severní Evropě nás uslyšíte od 12 hodin na frekvenci 11 640 kHz.
Ve východní Africe a na Blízkém východě si nás naladíte v 9.30 na frekvenci 21 700 kHz.